your name and address, the branch and years of service, your background before entering the service.
Okay. My name while I was in the service was Betty Eulings. Actually, my legal name is Elizabeth, but, you know, I didn't know any better at that time. But my married name is Booker. I live at 531 Edgewood Avenue, West Mifflin, PA. I served with the Army Nurse Corps from April 1st, 1944, until February the 5th, 1946. I was overseas in the Persian Gulf Command with the 19th Field Hospital from December 25th, 1944 until December 15th, 1945. Before entering the service, I lived in a small mining town in western Pennsylvania, attended California State College for a year and a half, and then entered Johns Hopkins Hospital School of Nursing in Baltimore, Maryland. And while I was a student, I joined the Cadet Nurse Corps in preparation for enlistment in the service. As a senior nurse, we were assigned to be charge nurses the last 6 months of overseas, the last 6 months of our nursing training, because Hopkins had sent two units overseas and there was a shortage of RNs at that time. And this proved to be good preparation for overseas duty and service with the Army Nurse Corps.
How did you, when you went overseas, what was your mode of transportation? Did you fly or? When you went as a unit.
When I went as a unit.
Yeah.
First I'd like to tell you a little bit about the early enlistment.
Okay.
I volunteered, I guess, primarily because of patriotism was high.
Mm-hmm.
And also I had six brothers in various branches of the service. And one of these brothers had been on the Utah in Pearl Harbor when it was sunk, but he was able to swim to safety and continue his service. I feel I was kind of moved, as all people are, by the history of their times. I think in times of war, it's a little more apparent that we are a part of the history of our times.
Mm-hmm.
My nursing education was my primary preparation for service in the Army Nurse Corps. And I was fortunate that two classmates of mine enlisted the same time that I did.
Uh-huh.
And they, they assured us we would stay together, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of made the adjustment.
I didn't know they would make those provisions.
Yeah, well, we weren't sure whether they'd be able to keep it or not, but they did, and so we served the 2 years together. I had my basic training at Camp Meade.
Did you?
Uh-huh.
Oh my!
In the month of April of 1944.
Oh, I was there later.
The basic training was rather rigorous for us, but of course not as rigorous as for the GIs. We did have our gas mask training.
Don't you recall that?
Yeah.
That was frightening.
And the drills and, you know, learning to keep step and so forth. From basic training, I was transferred to Camp Lee, Virginia.
Camp
Station.
Lee?
Uh-huh.
We were on one of our reserve assignments.
Yeah. And I was, at that time, I was assigned to a large surgical unit.
And the time that I spent there provided good orientation to Army medical service, and especially the supervision of corpsmen, you know, as they...
That was a big thing.
And it's amazing that, you know, to me, the help that they were able to give us. We received all of our immunizations there, our typhoid and smallpox and tetanus and typhus and cholera. So from all those injections, we really weren't sure where we were going.
We got all of that as basic training.
Oh, did
you? You know, in Fort Meade.
Yeah, we had some there and some, at Camp Lee.
Yeah.
Camp Lee, we were issued helmets and canteens and bedding and duffel bags and all that. Mm-hmm. And boy, we really began to feel that we were we were in the service, and we'd be getting orders soon. In October, we were sent to Camp Patrick Henry, Virginia, to the women's staging area there.
And we returned.
That's where you came in?
Yeah, near.
And on October 29th, we went to Hampton Roads, and on November 1st, we sailed. We got on a large troop ship. I don't remember the name of it at this time, but there were about 30 nurses and, you know, a few thousand soldiers.
Yes.
On the ship. We had a trunk issued to us, a duffel bag and a field bag, and we had to make those do for all of everything that we had to take or wanted to take overseas with us. I can still remember, you know, being in those military outfits, in that military outfit, marching up that gangplank.
You were
it's hard
afraid.
To believe that you're,
you're
really
afraid.
A part of it. You
sure,
felt at that
sure.
time you're really proud. The trip overseas was exciting. It's a new experience for me. And
were you seasick?
I was
many
seasick.
Of us.
Yes, I was seasick.
And they didn't have Dramamine.
Right. No. The first couple of days, and
there
were nurses. We had one nurse who was seasick all the way over, and
they
she
put
was
them in
so.
In sick bay.
Yeah, she was in sick bay, but when we got to our destination, she was sent back to the States because she had gotten run down so bad.
Oh.
And they found out she was pregnant. I remember sleeping in an upper bunk.
Right.
And then the tight quarters were a new experience.
And as the water swayed, you swayed.
Yeah. I remember sitting on deck and reading in the afternoons, meeting people from across the country. Two meals a day. You know, I never thought I could survive on two meals a day, but it certainly was plenty. Probably the hardest part was the confinement and the blackout of the ship at night, so you couldn't be out at all after dark. We still weren't sure where we were going, but our first indication was when we spotted the Rock of Gibraltar and sailed into the Mediterranean, but again, we still weren't sure. But the ship anchored off Algiers, and the nurses were invited to a dinner on shore, a dinner dance, you know. So we were excited about that.
In your exciting clothes.
Yeah, we got on our dress uniforms and took off for an evening of fun. From there, we went to Port Said in Egypt and sailed down the Red Sea.
So your history is...
So I learned a little bit about geography on this trip. So we sailed through the Red Sea, and of course as you do that, and we're sitting on a deck, you're thinking about the Bible, the biblical story about the
yes,
sea being divided. We went down to India Indian Ocean and sailed and landed in Bombay, India. Uh-huh. While in Bombay, we were billeted in a hotel and had a couple tours of the city. We were there about 3 days. One evening, my two friends and I went to an English officer's home for dinner, and I was really amazed at the number of servants this English officer had in his home. They were seemed like a caste system, because there was one to take care of children, one to clean, to cook, and there must have been 5 or 6 of them. And after the 3 days, we were loaded on a train for a trip to Pakistan. The train had bench seats with overhead rack for luggage. And when the train stopped for fuel, natives would swarm to the train begging for handouts. In the villages, poverty and poor health was more evident, especially the incidence of eye infections. But we didn't get off the train at all. In Pakistan, we boarded a small English ship for the trip to the Persian Gulf. Tea was served early in the morning when you were awakened, and again in the late afternoon. Mm. We enjoyed this. It was a leisurely trip, but somewhat of a cultural shock, as I watched the Indian making or kneading the bread with their bare feet.
Oh,
on
my.
The on a corner of the of the ship.
Were you saw poverty in France?
Did you?
We didn't.
Oh, you did. Okay.
No,
you wouldn't see it to that extent.
No, they provided meals and places.
Uh-huh. So we sailed up the Persian Gulf to the port of Khorramshahr. Not sure how you pronounce it. And we landed there on Christmas Eve.
So you in
44, and you in France.
Yeah.
But when we packed for overseas in late October, Christmas seemed
so far
ages away.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my friends, Wiz, one of the two classmates that went overseas with me, had been a little farsighted, and she opened her footlocker and pulled out a Christmas gift for Bunny and I.
Aww.
All wrapped in Christmas wrap. And we all cried because of her thoughtfulness. But we cried
for yourself.
Because it was Christmas and we were so far away from home. And also, I guess a little fearful, because we didn't know, still didn't know what was ahead of us. And we stayed on the ship that night. On Christmas Day, we were loaded onto a truck for a ride to the 19th Field Hospital in Andamas.
Oh, you were with the Field Hospital.
Yeah, that was about 150 or so miles inland in the desert area of Iran. Mm-hmm. We were exhausted. But they had a full-course Christmas dinner waiting for us, with turkey and all the trimmings. But the biggest treat occurred when we were shown to our billet and found the accumulated mail of 2 months on our bunks.
Oh, mail call was so very... in overseas and stateside.
Yeah, yeah. This camp was on the train and truck route for transport of supplies from America via the Persian Gulf to Russia in support of the fighting on the Western Front in Europe. The 19th Field Hospital provided medical service to the troops that served in this supply
service.
You
were in the 19th, is that?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. For a while. There was also a 19th Station Hospital, which was in Tehran. So we were there later.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting story I read about the Persian Gulf Command told that late in 1943, a truck driven by a Negro sergeant from Texas left the Persian Gulf port and headed north toward Russia with the millionth ton of lend-lease supplies to be hauled across Iran to the Western Front.
Mm.
And as he left, an American general and a Russian general shook hands. And as I rode that truck to Andamest a year later, there were other trucks traveling the same road with supplies, with more supplies for the Russians. The loaded trucks and trains heading for Russia were evidence of an American triumph in support of the battlefront.
Mm-hmm.
It was a massive transportation effort, for it included the modernization of a railroad system, changing fishing villages to modern ports, and setting up assembly lines in southern Iran to put together truck parts sent from Studebaker, Dodge, Chevrolet, Ford companies in America. And there were civilians who served in Iran too as experts to help with this assembling of all these parts into trucks that could be used. The medical care needed to take care of the thousands of soldiers and technical advisors and maintenance workers was provided by several centers in Iran. When the nurses first arrived, they lived and worked in tents, but by the time I got there, there were permanent facilities, and, you know, there was the 19th Field Hospital in Andamest, where I first served, then there was the 19th Station Hospital in Tehran, and there was the 21st Station Hospital in Khorramshahr, which was the port, and there was also 113th General Hospital in Quarry Camp in Ahwaz, Iran. Of course, when I went over, I went over as a replacement. So at that time, the service was beginning to become smaller.
Yeah,
it was getting smaller. The camp at Andamest, where I first served, was sprawled over the desert near the rail and truck routes. The hospital had three buildings with, you know, fingers, which were different units, wards. Because they were all one-story buildings. The nursing quarters were nearby, and it was a square construction with a center court.
Mm-hmm.
So the rooms were around the square, and the bathing facilities and lounging areas there too. But we did have privacy for some.
They always tried to.
All the rooms had a desert cooler set up on the windows, and that was a primitive form of air conditioning.
Air conditioning
with
right.
Straw inside wire on the window, and then water dripped through the straw and a fan through the air.
That was really primitive.
So they all had that, and which helped with the heat. You know, it could get as hot as 120 degrees there, or hotter. We were encouraged to take salt tablets, and they were always readily available.
Describe your perception of the contribution your service made to America's efforts for peace at time, place. What was the nature of some of your assignments?
Some of my assignments?
You had indicated you were field hospital.
We were a field hospital, but we worked, the assignment was primary general duty nursing.
Yes.
Which included responsibilities for management of the units, there was always at least one corpsman on a unit to assist you, you know, each shift.
Due to the lack of nurses.
Right. And we were responsible, at night, we were responsible, or evenings maybe responsible for, you know, two or three units with a corpsman on each unit. The supplies were plentiful. I don't remember having a shortage of supplies. Physician was always there or on call.
On call, yeah.
We worked a 12-hour shift.
There was no, as I indicated, sometimes, you know, it was more than 12 hours.
Yeah, 7 a.m., usually 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Probably as they brought your patients in.
Uh-huh. Night duty was assigned about 2 weeks every 3 months, you know. You didn't have a lot of that. Our uniform was a seersucker.
Mm-hmm.
Dress Stripe. And nurse cap, a brown and white stripe, with the uniform was a wraparound.
Right,
you had to tie securely.
Securely, or in pin up at the top.
Right, uh huh.
Not starch.
Yeah, the pay was about, I think, $166 a month. But you did have separate pay for overseas, which is about $16 a month. And also, at certain times, I would be designated as flight nurse, and you might get a little extra for that. That was to take a patient.
That was exciting.
Accompany
sort
a patient
of
on the plane.
Service.
Yeah. The food was good, but I missed mostly fresh fruits and vegetables.
Right.
There was an officer's club where dinners and dances were held weekly. Mm-hmm. Plenty of movies. And, you know, occasional USO shows. So that kind of summarizes my assignments. Mm-hmm. And I did enjoy the flight nursing because it was a little break from the hospital nursing. And
yes. Well,
but it was usually an overnight trip.
Sure.
And in fact,
it's like we went to the evacuation hospital. Uh-huh. You had yours.
Uh-huh.
What about any benefits, Betty? Did you glean any after you left the service? Were you able to take...
After I left the service, I did usually... utilize the GI Bill. In fact, I was separated in early January and in that same month enrolled at the University of Pittsburgh for a baccalaureate degree.
What year was that?
46. Early 46, I started there.
I got there in August.
Of course, they appreciated that because
it
helps stabilize your future.
Right.
Really,
it was the guiding.
Sure. And I had had some previous college and, you know, was able to transfer those credits
good.
In a year, year and a half. Okay.
What did you do after... your education helpful to you for your future employment and lifespan?
While I was working on the baccalaureate degree, I did work part-time general duty in pediatric nursing. So after I got the degree, then I got married, started to have a family. Started to have a family and didn't work for a couple of years, but when I did return, I of course went into nursing education, teaching pediatrics, and eventually went on and got the master's degree and served. Worked at the University of Pittsburgh, their nursing faculty for 4 years, and then went on to nursing education administration.
Good. Betty, don't you wonder now how you made all the adjustments when you came from a small town and how everything fell in place after a while? Even the time, the Army time telling was part difficult. You know, the 0900s and
1900
and so forth.
And I did learn that at that time, but I think I've forgotten it, and now they're starting to use it again in schedules and so forth. So I had to go back and recall.
There,
Betty,
are there any other thoughts that you'd like to share for your
history? I think that probably my most satisfying experiences were those spent working and talking with the soldiers about home as you cared for them. Even the Russian soldiers that we took care of would pull out pictures of family to show us. And most of our patients in Iran were, of course, none of them were battle casualties. They were in the hospital for medical reasons or the result of injuries from these truck accidents and so forth.
Lives were bad.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting to meet a soldier from my high school class. You know, when you don't see anybody from home for a long time. I did have two vacations while I was there. I had a 10-day trip to the Holy Land.
Yeah, it was very
which
nice.
Was all very well planned by the Army and by the service. I don't know exactly who did it, but all of the transportation, everything was planned. We got to visit Jerusalem and Nazareth and Bethlehem and Tel Aviv.
Well, that in itself is a dividend and plus.
And I also took a 4-day trip to the Caspian Sea. We rode up over the mountains of Iran in a truck, in an army truck.
You must be making many comparisons today and yesteryear about your army and what's going on in Iran today.
I think it would be, oh my gosh, when you think of what's happening there today and how the relationship with the United States has changed dramatically.
Just warped.
And it's really saddened you.
Yes.
I never felt in any danger.
I never did either, other than when we were.
But I was threatened a couple times emotionally. Females is a small minority among the male military received a great deal of attention. And but sometimes, you know, it could be overwhelming.
Yes.
And you would wonder about the
sincerity of it. Oh, yes. And I think every female and every nurse that served.
Yeah. Going overseas, I spent a fair amount of time with a young officer that I'd become acquainted with. And when we were about to leave the ship in Bombay, an older colonel came and said, "Betty, he's married." And I didn't know. So I was grateful for the warning. And of course we stopped the relationship right there. But
there were many such
it was funny because when I mentioned it to a priest later, after I reached Iran, he laughed, but he also published a list of all the single officers.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
So, I never heard of
that. So, I don't know, I think they all laughed about it, but,
Well, Betty, that was very, very interesting. I was so happy to hear about because your experiences were maybe parallel, but different.
Yeah, parallel in time, but different.
But different, right.
Yeah. You know, I think it was interesting. It took us 2 months to get to Iran on land and sea, but only 5 days to fly back home.
That's why I asked your motor traffic.
We flew, when we flew back, we came back, we stopped at Casablanca and stayed overnight there. And then stopped in the Azores, did a little sightseeing there, and then went to Newfoundland.
We passed by the Azores, but not.
You didn't stop. So, you know, I arrived home. Yeah, we went to Fort Dix.
Fort Dix.
And we're giving given a leave for Christmas. So I went home, you know, arrived home Christmas Day in 1945. And then went back to Fort Dix and was separated from active duty at that time.
They gave you an option to stay or separate.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
they probably did, but
yeah,
I don't
but
remember.
I was ready
to go home.
You know? I was too, but then...
We thought we were going to be reassigned to the Japanese.
That was very, very interesting. I'm sure, Betty, you've contributed a lot for the
history. It was a great experience
it
for
is.
Me, too. I would never
You couldn't
have that, you know. I think if I had the same trip now,
how costly.
It cost would be, but I think I would get a lot more out of it.
Yeah, well, reactions, don't forget, we mature.
Sure.
They're many years later.
Yeah.
Well, there's a span of 40 years. Really?
Right.
40 years.
Good 40 years.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.